Welcome back to the emdocs.net podcast. Today, Manny Singh and I are going to discuss some vital aspects of the novel COVID-19 illness. You can access the podcast from our homepage on emdocs.net and subscribe in iTunes. We have included a summary of all these points with respective links for further reading. Today, we are covering the new Journal of American College of Cardiology guidelines concerning acute myocardial infarction and COVID-19. And our second post looks at the use of ultrasound for COVID-19. Manny, want to start us off?
The first post covers the JACC guidelines concerning acute myocardial infarction and COVID-19. Britt, how about we take this section by section? I'll start off with the pre-hospital setting. EMS should conduct a brief assessment of COVID-19 status in the report to the center. ED bypass is not generally recommended. EMS providers should have a low threshold to wear appropriate PPE when responding to those with cardiac complaints, especially when responding to a patient with cardiac arrest where PPE is critical. If the patient is at a referral or non-PCI-capable hospital with an established COVID-19 patient, fibrinolysis within 30 minutes of STEMI diagnosis, and then transfer when necessary for rescue PCI may be preferable. Regarding a field STEMI activation, these patients should be evaluated in the ED to assess for COVID-19 confirmed diagnosis of the STEMI.
And that takes us to what happens in the emergency department. One major point is that PCI remains the standard of care for patients presenting to PCI centers, including patients with COVID-19 that's been confirmed or is probable. Many of these patients with COVID-19 may have myocarditis or a stress cardiomyopathy, and fibrinolysis increases the risk of bleeding in these patients. The ED should focus on cath lab transfer as soon as possible in cases of confirmed STEMI. While door-to-balloon time of less than 90 minutes from first medical contact is recommended, this article acknowledges that there might be delays due to further evaluation and management required, including the use of ultrasound for wall motion abnormalities, assessment of COVID-19 status, and respiratory support. If COVID-19 is probable or confirmed, and the patient has symptoms and ECG findings consistent with acute myocardial infarction, the article states that ultrasound can be considered to evaluate for wall motion abnormality, but you should still proceed to primary PCI. If COVID-19 is possible and symptoms and ECG are consistent with acute myocardial infarction, then proceed to PCI. If primary PCI is not feasible, a pharmacoinvasive approach with fibrinolysis might be considered.
As most of you know, most of our patients don't come gift-wrapped as a STEMI. In patients with equivocal symptoms, atypical ECG, or delayed presentation and possible but not confirmed STEMI, further evaluation of the ED is recommended. Use serial EKGs, bedside ultrasound, and chest x-ray while also evaluating for other conditions such as COVID-19 myocarditis. At this time, a joint decision between the emergency clinician and interventional cardiologist is recommended to determine further evaluation and management. If the patient is unstable, an invasive approach in the cath lab is recommended. Not all patients with COVID-19 and STEMI benefit from reperfusion or mechanical support. In those with critical disease at high risk for mortality, including ARDS and mechanically ventilated, compassionate care may be appropriate. This decision should be based on individual patient prognosis, family and patient wishes, and resources available at the local center. Patients with cardiogenic shock or out-of-hospital cardiac arrest have poor outcomes and are at high risk for droplet-based spread of COVID-19. Resuscitated out-of-hospital cardiac arrest patients should be selectively considered for cath lab activation if persistent STEMI is present on ECG and wall motion abnormalities are present on ultrasound. Out-of-hospital cardiac arrest patients without STEMI should not receive an early interventional approach unless hemodynamically unstable and acute coronary occlusion is high on the differential. Mechanical circulatory support with revascularization may be considered for those with cardiogenic shock with a team in full PPE. VV ECMO should be considered in those with severe pulmonary decomposition and failure to oxygenate on a case-by-case basis.
The great thing about this article is that they even include non-STEMI and those with elevated troponin in their joint statement. Elevated troponin is a poor prognostic marker in patients with COVID-19, and cardiac injury likely occurs due to several mechanisms. Patients with COVID-19 and non-STEMI should be managed medically and only taken for urgent angiography and possible PCI if high-risk features are present or if hemodynamically unstable. Note that the joint statement recommends use of the GRACE score. You can access this on MDCalc. Those with COVID-19, either confirmed or probable, and non-STEMI, but no high-risk features, can be managed with guideline-initiated medical treatments, and once stabilized, further evaluation as an outpatient is recommended. For those with possible COVID-19 and ACS, standard medical therapy is indicated, with an early invasive approach, if also clinically indicated. And finally, rapid COVID-19 testing is recommended to guide further evaluation and management.
Our next post looks at the use of ultrasound in patients with suspected or confirmed COVID-19. Prior studies have found ultrasound in trained hands can distinguish influenza viral pneumonia versus suspected bacterial pneumonia with good inter-rater reliability in both adults and kids. In patients with COVID-19, ultrasound can rapidly identify patients who are likely to have it and help with ICU management. Ultrasound findings correlate well with CT findings as long as they extend to the pleural line. We still need to find the optimal way to use lung ultrasound, especially as hospitals experiencing surges of patients may struggle with radiology resources such as CT and chest x-ray, where terminal cleaning and exposure to other staff can occur. Using a bedside test as lung ultrasound can also be beneficial through less movement of these infectious patients, exposure to a few providers. Britt, how can we scan these patients?
First, you have to choose your transducer. Linear and microconvex transducers allow the most detailed assessment of the pleural line. Phased array or curvilinear transducers are also helpful and they can be used, but the depth must be decreased to appreciate subtleties of the pleural lining. If your machine has it, use the lung mode setting. If it doesn't, consider turning off the multi-beam detection. Now, there are many different protocols you can use in your scanning. It's best to have a comprehensive and systematic approach to image the lungs. The one we describe in the post splits the thorax into an anterior, lateral, and posterior zones. The posterior zone can be assessed in the patient who is seated or by rolling the patient to either side. Scan each zone thoroughly, and you might want to split each zone into superior and inferior sections of each and save clips. Transverse views allow you to see more of the pleural line. Finally, add a bedside cardiac ultrasound to look at global function. Manny, what can we find on ultrasound in the patients with COVID-19?
Most of the findings are concentrated posteriorly and inferiorly. B lines and interstitial syndrome is generally what is seen in this disease. Early in the disease process, there are focal patches of B lines. As the disease becomes more severe, you get diffuse confluent B lines, which progress to a sonographic white lung. In addition to this, you can definitely see some small subpleural consolidations, often associated with adjacent B lines. And lastly, you can see pleural line abnormalities, which appears irregular and thickened. When comparing COVID versus CHF, though B line patterns can be seen in both, COVID-19 has the accompanying pleural line abnormalities. Bacterial pneumonias can also be present as a superinfection, so look for larger consolidations with air bronchograms. Other clinical and laboratory parameters can be helpful here too, including a CBC and procalcitonin. If you want to visualize some great examples of these findings, check out the POCUS Atlas, which has assembled like a collection of COVID-19 lung ultrasound findings.
One of the biggest questions is who to scan with ultrasound in the first place. We don't really know how to best use lung ultrasound in this pandemic, but there are some ideas that the post discuss. Keep in mind that ultrasound doesn't replace you at the bedside. It's only an adjunct to your decision-making in combination with history and exam. The first group of people are those who are otherwise well and who will probably be discharged home and don't meet criteria for testing. In this patient population, ultrasound might find findings consistent with COVID-19, allowing you to provide a presumptive diagnosis. The other population are those who are sick, who will need hospitalization. Ultrasound allows you to identify characteristic patterns of COVID-19, and it allows you to identify alternative diagnoses, such as pneumothorax, CHF, large lobar pneumonias, and pleural effusions. Keep in mind that while small pleural effusions have been noted in some COVID patients, larger effusions more likely suggest an alternative diagnosis.
Okay, so you scan the patient and have a good idea of what's going on based on the history, physical exam, and ultrasound. There's one last step that you have to do. Clean the machine. What is the best way to protect ourselves and other patients after scanning COVID-19 patients? This is one of the biggest questions and potential barriers to large-scale lung ultrasound for COVID-19, especially when you're thinking of a mass triagenous surge. Here are five recommendations that have come up in discussions among ultrasound expert colleagues. Number one, remove all non-essential items from the ultrasound machine. This includes any attached baskets, which may contain intravenous access supplies, gel warmers, and manuals. Number two, use PPE on the machine. Wrap the machine in a gown to avoid contact with parts of the machine. Number three, use transducer covers. These are generally used for sterile procedures such as central lines and nerve blocks. Four, use single gel packets instead of the whole gel bottle. And lastly, wipe the whole machine from screen to wheels with vendor-approved wipes according to wipe instructions. Allow for an effective wet time and dry time. Handheld units may be particularly useful and easier to disinfect. One suggested idea is to use a wireless probe and tablet, each placed in their own single plastic cover.
Thanks for those tips, Manny. My big takeaway is that ultrasound might be helpful. Experience from our international colleagues in China and Italy suggests that lung ultrasound is a powerful bedside technique that can be helpful in rapid, presumptive diagnoses of COVID-19 patients. Whether you find yourself in the thick of a surge or preparing for one, consider how you can use lung ultrasound in your assessment of patients with COVID-19.
Thanks, Britt. Now that rounds out our summary of the key EM docs posts. Thanks for joining us and stay tuned for the next episode. Feel free to comment on our site and let us know if you have any feedback. Stay safe and healthy, everyone.